Radio's coverage of AusCert's 2008 conference is sponsored by Microsoft. Visit itradio.com.au/AusCert08 for IT Radio's full coverage of this year's event and to hear Microsoft's AusCert presentations. Or go to itradio.com.au/security for the Risky Business podcast, honing your eardrums since February 2007.
Hello and welcome to this special interview. I'm Patrick Gray. Here we are talking to Kimberly Zenz, iDefence's Russia expert. You can hear her full AusCert presentation on itradio.com.au/AusCert08. But in this interview, I thought it would be interesting to find out how she became a recognised expert on Russian cybercrime and where she sees malware hosting providers like the Russian Business Network heading.
I got into cybercrime kind of from an odd angle. I've been studying Russian for a really long time. I just used to study the Russian language. The first time I went to Russia, I was 14. It was a few months before the Soviet Union fell. I had no idea that this was coming when I was there. Like, I was completely shocked to find out 3 months later that the country I was just at didn't exist. But, you know, I've been going back and forth to Russia ever since. One of my undergraduate majors was Russian studies. I have a master's degree in economic development in the former Soviet Union. I've done work in Russian Far East and Uzbekistan and Afghanistan, which wasn't technically Russia, but...
There were Russians there.
Well, no, but actually the pilots speak Tajik and Russian, but not English, so I ended up kind of just hanging out with them a lot and
so I suppose a combination
get free flights and stuff.
So a combination between the economic stuff and the Russian language stuff, mm-hmm. and eventually what?
Well, what happened was I started doing stuff on like organized crime, and then.
And hang on, that's a leap. How did you? Start
well, economics. Doing stuff so you work. You start looking into Russian economics, and then you get into corruption. And you get into organized crime fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Particularly because that's interesting, and the company I was working at the time. I mean, they were mostly security focused, so they weren't interested to know improvements in industry. Even though that may be like a big story for Russia and a good thing, that's they were worried about what are the security risks in Russia. They weren't interested in what are the improvements in manufacturing. So I started really focusing on researching organized crime, and then they needed someone to kind of look at cybercrime, and they didn't really have anyone. They were like, well, you do organized crime. It's the same, which it isn't, but, you know. And so I kind of got thrown into it. And then when I left, I went to go work at iDefence, and that's what I do exclusively.
So you've worked a lot on the Russian Business Network and, you know, analyzing it. But what's the I mean, how did you get drawn to the RBN?
Well, I mean, it was a major source of cybercrime. It was a service provider to quite a few criminals. So we saw a couple of things at the same time. At one side, just within iDefence, we have a team that focuses on malicious code, and we have a team that focuses on attacks on our customers. And they started seeing, starting in 2005, they just started seeing things coming out of this net block, and they just made a note of it, you know. So when later we went back, it was easy to see, you know, when the trend had started. But at the same time, because I do speak Russian and I work with Russia, within VeriSign, there's a group that deals with phishing takedowns, and they were having a hard time getting this ISP to respond to their abuse complaints. And so they asked me, could you just try talking to them? Maybe it's an issue of language. So I tried talking to them. It's not an issue of language.
And, they're like saying, get stuffed.
Yeah. And so they just ignore you.
The RBN basically is a big ISP for hosting malware.
Yeah,
I mean, that's really what it is.
It's for criminal activities. But then what happened was, so my next step is I contacted people in Russia. I was like, I can't get them to respond. Do you know anything? And they're like, yeah, they're not going to respond. Like, basically, they already had seen activity there stronger. And so when they said that, then I went back and I looked, you know, and really we have a really, really good malcode team. They did a lot of this. But we went back and looked at all the older stuff. And we're like, well, yeah, they are. And then we did a scan of all their known net space of them and affiliated ISPs. And like, we didn't find anything legal, which seemed kind of damning in terms of what they really are.
What stuns me, though, if it's just a case of one net block or a collection of net blocks, I mean, why can't we just really get the word out about where the RBN lives and just...
block them?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, many people were blocking them, and many of our customers blocked them, but people are afraid to block them because you get people who would say, like, well, maybe we have one customer in Russia. I'm like, no, you don't in this case. But sometimes they've been really burned in the past being too overzealous to block things. They really have caused damage to their customers. Not to mention that is someone who has a major security department that's paying attention to this. You know, somebody who's just opening an email that they think has like a funny video attached to it, they have no access to blacklists. And many residential ISPs, they don't follow it that specifically.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, corruption's obviously a big angle that allows these guys, a big reason why these guys can just continue to operate basically in the open. They do seem to have some pretty good connections with government, wouldn't you say?
Well, I mean, within Russia, corruption is a huge issue across the board. It's not just an issue of cybercrime. There are definitely, I mean, I know investigators in Russia that I have the greatest respect for that are very honest and very capable. But, you know, corruption is a challenge. Now, RBN was a special case. They were particularly corrupt. They managed to tie into quite a few groups. And that was like, they operated longer than any other similar organization would have been able to operate in Russia because of that. But it is a challenge.
Now, also, we were just chatting before we got started on this interview, and you know, I was asking you about really the geographic spread on this, and if you focus on other countries, and you happen to mention that a lot of these guys in Russia who are engaged in all sorts of badness are just like jumping on their, you know, metaphorical bicycles and riding over into the Ukraine because there's no language barrier for them in the Ukraine, and you know, Russia is actually starting to get better at the enforcement angle. So,
well, it's not just Ukraine. I mentioned Ukraine because it's some of the, actually the larger groups that were on RBN, like they ended up over there, but not most of them, just some of them. But
What is the latest with RBN? Is RBN still an ongoing concern?
No, the RBN as such has ceased to operate. They've actually had their net block revoked. Those addresses no longer exist. Now there was no major arrests made. Those people are still there. They're still operating. If we look at the major customers of RBN, we see them in other places. They haven't but the organization as such does not exist.
Okay, so a few of these guys now have popped up in Ukraine.
Yes.
Okay.
But like, it's not just Ukraine. There's many, many countries. Ukraine is attractive because it's close. You have ties. It's Russophone. Same with Belarus. You see it just a little starting now. You see moving to these countries. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't even single out Ukraine as like the most egregious by any stretch of the imagination. There's quite a few countries. There's a country. There's like one ISP even in Malaysia that's very, very popular. There are many Russian services and other that offer the advertise on Russian forums. And when you go and you talk to them, like you're interested in purchasing services, they'll offer you servers in many different countries. And what they're doing is they're actually renting servers in larger ISPs that for the most part are legal. So you can't block that because, you know, most of the people on there are totally legitimate, and the different servers, maybe they move them every couple months. You can't just say something like just all of these no access, because most people are legal and legitimate users. That's also, they're not that much more expensive. They cost like $50 more a server than an RBN server would cost. And it makes enforcement that much more difficult. First of all, now you have to have access to those. At least, you know, Russian investigators can get access to servers within Russia a lot easier than they can get access to servers in Malaysia or Turkey or the U.S. Or China is another one. There's many of them. But like,
the world.
Yeah, the world. And then also, like, say you've managed to find something and prove it. Now you need to deal with the country where the victim is, the country where the attacker is, the country where the server is to get that, you know, to get the evidence to be legally be able to prosecute. If you've got servers in two countries, it's maybe I'll identify that you've been involved in this one scam, but I won't connect you with the other one that's like in another country. I won't say that's you. So that makes it hard.
I guess it's really funny, isn't it? Because the RBN was the first example that came to the public's attention of people just operating so brazenly. It used to be that people would actually just break into a server, drop some malware on it, and then, you know, the admin would find it, clean it up, you know. But these guys were like, you'd ring them up, and it's like, can you please, you know, you guys have got malware on your servers? And they'd say, yes, we know, we are a malware provider.
No, they wouldn't do that.
But I mean, it was like sort of like that, right? I mean,
they're very open about it. They'd advertise on forums, even some of the pretty easy to access forums.
This is what I mean. What happened when
it's not just them. There's many other bulletproof hosting providers, and it wasn't RBN, wasn't the first one. They actually even took over the Netspace of one that had been closed down in 2005. Like, it's not just them, but what sort of made them different was how blatant they were.
Yeah.
Nothing really
happened to them.
Nothing really happened to them, no.
So, like, really, I mean, we have entered the age now where people are like, well, you know, instead of just having to rely on compromised boxes, we can just go into a data center, put in a few servers, and tell the world to go screw itself.
Absolutely. And particularly when you're able to take advantage of either shadier ISPs that don't care that they're selling, you know, services to a couple people on the side, or truly innocent ISPs that just don't have the capacity, because even the most honest of internet service providers will have someone, you know, abusing their services, you know, and so it makes it very difficult to track them. But in the meantime, their servers are relatively secure.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting though, like talking to companies like Arbor Networks, who, if you know, acquired Eloquia, and they've got stuff from the edge up to the core, and you know, they're really going to be looking at, I imagine they're going to be really looking at projects designed to be able to knock out these sorts of net blocks for their customers. Do you see that as being on the right path to solve?
Well, if you can identify a net block, very, you know, 100% conclusively say that these are bad and they're always bad, then there's a case for that. The problem that I see is when it is, it's like a, you know, you change every couple months and you're changing servers in different countries.
And then you become like a spam blacklist.
Yeah, basically.
And we all know how well they work.
Exactly. It becomes a lot more difficult to do reliably. Mm. I mean, even at iDefense, we track IP addresses and, we, you know, because you have to do something.
Yeah.
But it becomes very difficult.
Wow, that's the best news we've had in a long time on this show. Kimberly Zenz, thank you very much for taking some time out to speak to us here on Risky Business.
You're welcome.